Nemoto presents filmmaking giants. Jean-Luc Godard, the rebel of the new wave. Narrated with Microsoft Azure using the Ava voice. Running time, approximately 17 minutes. Jean-Luc Godard. Hello, and welcome back to filmmaking giants who changed how we see the world. We have walked with directors who perfected grammar, who gave the camera breath and room's conscience, who made time itself the protagonist. Now we stand with a man who took cinema apart in front of the audience and invited us to read the pieces. Jean-Luc Godard did not simply add a flourish to the established language of film. He changed the contract between filmmaker and viewer. He taught us to notice the seam, to hear the splice, to watch the ideology hiding inside a beautiful shot, to accept that a film could be criticism while it plays and a love letter while it argues. His style became many styles: charm in a stolen car, blues in widescreen Capri light, red paint across the end of the world. Yet beneath the shifts lay one rigorous promise. The image is never innocent, the cut is never neutral, and attention is an ethical act. He arrived late to the Nouvelle Vague, and somehow first. A critic at Callas du Cinéma, a hungry regular at the Cinémathèque, a young man who had watched Hawks and Hitchcock and Renoir and Rossellini so closely that his admiration turned into a tool, he began by writing sentences that already moved like shots. Short, declarative, amused, suspicious of complacency. Then he picked up a camera with his friends and a city that still belonged to pedestrians and began to shoot at the speed of breathing. About to souffle, breathless, was supposed to be a crime picture with a plot as expandable as a newspaper column. It became a demonstration that narrative could be made of jumps without apology. He put a handheld camera in a car. He let a conversation linger, then sliced it into ellipses. He put two lovers in a room and discovered that the air between lines of dialogue contained more meaning than any plan to foreshorten it. The jump cut did not arrive like a theory. It arrived like a shrug that turned into a revolution. Why hide time's raggedness when it is the truth of city life? Why pretend that every gesture belongs to a neat chain of cause and effect when desire does not? He did not invent direct address. He restored it to cinema's repertoire and gave it new uses. In Vivre esse vai, Anna Karina's Nana sits in profile and then frontal, watched in crisp, numbered tableaus. She locks eyes with the lens with a calm that makes journalism and prayer sound like the same voice for a moment. A philosopher enters a cafe and speaks of language. The camera listens because the room does. Later, Nana watches Dreyer's Joan of Arc cry. A tear climbs her cheek as if silently correcting the old idea that cinema's power is to forget you are watching. Godard's power was to make the watching itself tender. In Pierrot Le Fou, he sent Carina and Belmondo into a road movie that behaves like a pop art collage, primary color blocks, comic panels, Renoir's River Remembered, and American Violence quoted and satirized at once. His camera did not so much admire faces as converse with them. He cut when a thought shifted, not when a schedule dictated. If you want one clean slice of his craft, stand on the set of Le Mépris, Contempt, and watch him teach widescreen to think. Georges Delarue strings open like a curtain. Bardot asks if she has loved her shoulders, her knees, as if beauty had become a checklist. Then the film widens to cinemascope and Greece and the long, disintegrating day where a marriage tries to survive money. Raoul Cotard's camera drifts through a modernist apartment as if the walls were constantly redeciding what they meant. Fritz Lang, playing himself, brings old gravitas to a production without center of gravity. Michel Piccoli's hat becomes a thesis about men who wear hats to borrow authority. Godard treated color as argument. Capri blue cannot save a couple. Red does not guarantee passion. Golden light can forgive, but will not fabricate respect. The film critiques producers while needing their checks, reveres cinema while scolding it for colluding with vanity. It is not a paradox. It is adulthood. He would return to this double stance often. Love the medium so much that you refuse to let it lie. He wrote title cards like telegrams and put them inside the film, not only at its edges. A phrase by law treatment, a name, a year, a slogan stolen from a wall and rebutted in the next breath, his intertitles functioned as breath marks and boxing gloves. He fell in love with typography because it is the purest form of framing. A word on black insists that we decide if we believe the sentence before we are distracted by a beautiful face. He took quotations seriously and playfully. He turned a movie into an essay the way Montaigne turned a paragraph into a walk. To watch masculine feminine is to watch the 60s, pop records, polling booths, cigarettes, pregnancy, radical pamphlets, consider themselves in a mirror that refuses to flatter. To watch Du Ou Trouachose's KJECSDL is to watch Paris become a system, freeways and supermarkets, and to hear a whispering voiceover correct the image as it unfolds, the director speaking near the mic, uncertain, curious, not pretending to be a god. He made the split between sound and picture honest again. A bird sings while a man lies. Jazz insists that a breakup contains rhythm. A gunshot happens off-screen and arrives as a social fact more than a spectacle. He discovered, long before the phrase became common, that the soundtrack is a parallel intelligence. He did not remain the man who invented the jump cut. Revolutions grow up or curdle. He tried to grow. 1968 taught him that cinema's elegance can be conscripted by power, that pretty pictures soothe while history rearranges the furniture. He formed the Zyga Vertov Group with Jean-Pierre Gorin and others, named for a Soviet who had wanted to make a camera as honest as a city. Together they made films that behave like pamphlets and like workshops. British Sounds treats a factory floor as a score. Pravda and Ben Diest interrogate slogans by filming the breath that carries them. Letter to Jane reads a single news photograph of Jane Fonda in Hanoi with such concentration that you either learn a new kind of literacy or walk away annoyed. These works can be bleak to watch if you come seeking comfort. That is the point. He is training viewers to separate rhetoric from responsibility. If some of the films are strident, they are also scrupulous, always pulling back the curtain to show the hands that place words in the frame. He returned to narrative with skepticism undimmed and delight recovered. Tout Vie Bien builds a meat factory set as a slice through a building, walls removed like a dollhouse. The camera tracks laterally, revealing rooms as if lifting lids off boxes. Jane Fonda and Eve Montan discover that star power is poor currency when workers organize. Later, Sauve Caput, Lavi. Every man for himself and passion and prenom Carmen allow romance and farce back in, but keep the seams exposed. An orchestra in rehearsal interrupts a heist. A TV control room misreads its own signals. Video monitors multiply images until truth has to be rechosen minute by minute. He fought with broadcasters, loved the cheap plastic of videotape, cut on machines that felt like toys and thought like scalpels. He had discovered a new speed for essay, instant replay, not to cheapen thought but to let the thought correct itself without waiting for grants. He aged into a maker of mosaics. Histoires du cinéma took a decade to assemble and looks at first like television having a dream, clips upon clips, voices quoting and contradicting, paintings cross-faded with newsreel, slow motion over a sentence by Malraux, Glenn Gould's piano finding room between machine hum and gunfire. The title is plural on purpose. He refuses to pretend there is only one history of this medium. He lays out strands, cinema and the century's crimes, cinema and women's faces, cinema and money, cinema and war, cinema and the silence after the projector stops. He writes on the image, scrawled text that is sometimes schoolboy, sometimes scripture, and dares a viewer to keep up, and forgives them when they do not. It is a requiem, and also a syllabus. It changes how you see every other movie because it teaches you to ask not what the shot means, but what it is doing in the company it keeps. Late work looked like prophecy because he had anticipated digital's nervousness. Éloge de l'Amour observes memory dissolving into images that have lost their weight. Notre Musique travels to Sarajevo to ask whether poetry can survive the logistics of post-war. Film socialism speaks in a Navajo subtitle style, reduced, telegraphic, the way the internet would later abbreviate nuance into hashtags. Goodbye to Language uses 3D to insult 3D, letting images misregister so that the audience has to choose which eye to believe, teaching us that perspective is a moral decision. The image book collages cinema and news into a scream and a caress with the director's voice, old now, distinct, insisting that we learn to read again. His last films are not hard because he despises the audience. They are hard because he respects us enough to assume we can grow new literacy. He never stopped believing that a sequence of images could discover a truth and that the truth might be unflattering to our desires. Behind the bravura, a workshop, Raoul Cotard made movement look inevitable. Pierre Richent, Georges de Beauregard, Anatole Dahlman, producers and fixers, kept doors open that he would then walk through and argue about. Anna Karina, muse and partner, gave his frames a softness they could not manufacture without her. Michel Legrand wrote melodies that taught his jump cuts to smile. Georges Delerue taught widescreen how to ache. Antoine Duhamel taught color how to dance. Goddard loved bodies and betrayed them only when he believed the lie of glamour was about to harm them. He loved faces and refused to fetishize them. He loved cars as pamphlets on wheels, records as time machines, paperback books as props that never stop reading their owners back. He could be cruel, especially when a cause or a joke had taken hold of his morning. He cut friends with the same sharpness he used on film stock. He made amends. He failed to, he moved on. If you look for saints here, you'll find instead a worker whose materials included people and who sometimes used them with the impatience of a man late for an appointment with an idea. The films correct him, often gently. The women look back. The workers speak. The intertitles interrupt the director's own impulse to dominate a scene. Throughout, a method clarifies. Show the apparatus so that the audience cannot be seduced by it unawares. Quote so that no single voice can bully the room. Cut in a way that creates thought rather than hiding it. Because he made the seam visible, he gave us practical tools outside the cinema. If you lead a team, show your edits. Let people see the draft before the memo cleans it, so they learn how thought is made instead of only experiencing the finished edifice as a law. If you run a newsroom, place images beside their counterimages. Do not fear confusion. Fear the counterfeit clarity of a single, unopposed angle. If you teach, lay quotations next to one another until a class begins to hear how one sentence keeps a promise that another merely announces. If you make policy, write your intertitles, one-line declarations, checked against what your budget will actually fund. Let the typography embarrass you into honesty. If you build products, break the fourth wall with users as a right. Show them the mechanism. Ask them to interrupt. Build their interruption into the release. For filmmakers, the kit is abundant and moral. Use the jump cut as acknowledgement that time is not obedient. Address the audience not to flatter yourself, but to join a conspiracy of understanding. Let sound contradict picture, so that truth can appear in the gap. Let color speak as argument, not as coding. Quote your influences, so that gratitude is legible. Admit your politics without making slogans the only language your film can speak. When you reach for a beautiful shot, turn it twice in a light. If it seduces you into forgetting the harm it carries, cut. If it persuades you to remember the harm and carry it honestly, proceed. He believed that aesthetics are never separable from ethics. The image is a vote. He changed how we see the world, not merely by showing us new things to look at, but by training us to look at looking. After Goddard, no advertisement can pretend to be neutral, no news montage to be natural, no cut to be innocent. We become responsible for our pleasure. We learn to ask, in front of every image, who benefits from this arrangement of faces and sounds? Who is missing? What quotation would correct this flattery? Where, in this flow, is the moment we are being told not to notice? The gift is not paranoia, It is literacy. He made a public out of spectators, then invited the public to make itself political. He also, this is easy to forget amid the manifestos, loved the simple phenomena of cinema. A girl's hair in afternoon light, a scooter by the river, cigarettes and ashtrays, the swivel of a dancer's shoulder, a man in a suit running hopelessly late across a boulevard, a child's serious question. He caught them in passing, and because he had trained you to mistrust seduction, when he let beauty stand unqualified, you felt it as grace, not as salesmanship. The later work, grim when read as diagnosis, contains sudden gentlenesses. The way a hand holds a book, the way a dog, indifferent to ideology, makes a scene honest by refusing to perform. He knew that an image can be a home for a second, even when the house is burning. He died in 2022, having chosen the hour, a gesture that ignited old debates and felt, in his case, like another form of editorial control. The last cut belongs to the maker. Tributes tried to explain him and could not. Enemies tried to dismiss him and could not. The best memorial is to rewatch and then to change a habit. Let your next story show its stitches. Let your next decision include its citation. Let your next meeting contain a moment when someone looks into the lens and speaks to the audience assembling outside your room. Learn to stop a film halfway and pick up a book. Learn to put down the book and make a film on your phone that argues with the last sentence you underlined. He believed art is a conversation with the living and the dead. He made sure the dead could still interrupt. At a sidewalk cafe, in memory more than in documentary, he keeps his sunglasses on because light hurts and because performance requires costume. He orders coffee and edits in the cup. He whispers a quotation and cuts it with a punchline. He holds your attention just long enough for you to notice he has slipped something in your pocket, a responsibility. Use it. The world is made of images now more than ever, and he told us not to be afraid of that forest. He told us to carry a match and a notebook and to mark the trees that lie. Thank you for listening to this episode of Filmmaking Giants, Who Changed How We See the World.